Hi there, I'm equipment editor Jim Park. Welcome to another episode of HDT Talks Trucking. What if you were just driving happily down the road and your windows started rolling up and down all by themselves, or the horn started blowing, or your navigation system led you unwittingly into a massive traffic jam? Well, those are examples of vehicle hacks that have already occurred in the real world. They were facilitated by vulnerabilities in onboard applications and mobile services offered by well-known suppliers. They're well documented too. We have links in of those various accounts in the show notes below. My guest on this episode is Chaim Cantor. He's president of North American Operations at Upstream Security and a specialist in the field of emerging threat vectors and the hazards they pose. Chaim Cantor, the Vice President of Upstream Security. Thanks for joining us on HDT Talks Trucking, sir. Glad to have you aboard.
Glad to be with you here today, Jim.
We're going to talk about cybersecurity in a way I think most people won't be familiar with it at this point in time. It's not dealing with the individual threat to a truck fleet or a truck, but big picture. Could you give us a sense of where we are today in 2023 with automotive security when it comes to this kind of technology?
Yes. So what we see when we're looking at the automotive landscape, the cybersecurity landscape, we see that we've reached an inflection point. That inflection point is moving away from just talking about number of cybersecurity incidents, which they are growing. I mean, the number of cybersecurity incidents grew up in the last five to seven years by 400%. So the incidents are growing, but we're moving away from just talking about the number of incidents to talking really deeply looking at the impact of the incident. Okay. So what do I mean by impact? Two main things. One, how many vehicles are really impacted by a single security incident? And we'll talk about the growth between an incident that maybe the implication was one single vehicle, to incidents that now impact a fleet, to impacting multi-fleets. Right. So the impact from one single incident goes from one vehicle to millions of vehicles per incident. The second thing we're looking at, what is the financial impact? Is there really an impact to the operations, to the fleet operations? And we've seen that happening as well now, which in the past, we really talked about white hats versus black hats. And we see there is a trend there that's changing as well. So the white hats is, these are the good guys. These are the researchers that they hack into vehicles for research perspective to alert. Mm-hmm. The problem is, by the way, that once they publish that, the black hats, which are the bad guys, now they know how to hack vehicles as well. And we see a tremendous growth, by the way, between white hats and black hats. Now almost 70% of the incidents are coming from black hats and not from white hats. That's one. The second thing that we see, that in addition to black hats usually, they have some kind of a financial gain, and that's why they're attacking the vehicle. But there's two things that we see. One, we see now new reasons for black hats. Some of them are geopolitical, as recent as the Russian-Ukrainian war. We've seen some examples of that. Mm-hmm. But also the new thing that we're seeing now is we're seeing people hacking through cybersecurity their own vehicles. So can they avoid paying for premium services, which is where the market is growing, selling these services.
Yeah, I guess that's good for the fleet, but not so good for the OEM with the people selling the cars.
Exactly.
You talk about the number of incidents. We've had a number of ransomware attacks in trucking in the past couple of years we're aware of. There's probably a lot more than we know of. But how does the number of incidents affect an individual fleet? Is this a case of the vehicles or some of the technology on board those vehicles that they own or operate? Are part of that that hack or that effort to crack them?
Yes, and one of the reasons that we see more attacks and more attacks on fleets is because one of the trends that we see, there are more and more new vectors to attack a vehicle. So if in the past you really needed to understand deeply how vehicle work, so when you wanted to attack the internal elements, you wanted to attack an ECU or a TCU, which are these little computers that are part of the vehicle. You really had to know a lot of knowledge about cars. What we see is a huge trend in growth of vehicles being attacked through APIs. And about 20% of the attacks now are based on an API or mobile services, that this is what's running a fleet. So you don't need to know anything about a vehicle, but you find a vulnerability within those APIs. In the API world, OWASP top 10 are the top 10 attacks that we have. Almost all of them are applicable to the vehicle world. So we saw, for example, the Orbicom attack recently, the ransomware attack. That was done purely through an API attack.
So in that case, the attackers were going after Orbicom, but the impact was felt by all of the people who use Orbicom products.
Exactly.
Wow. And at that level, I guess the individual fleet can't do much about it, can they?
Well, they can, because they want to make sure that whoever is providing their solution is protected.
Well, that raises an interesting question. If I'm buying a telematics service from any provider, I don't want to name names, but just, you know, brand X telematics services, how do I as a fleet owner know that they've taken all the appropriate steps upstream? Pardon the name, not referring to your company, but, you know, beyond what I can control on my own dashboard.
So I think it needs a lot of education. And just like the fleet owners or the fleet managers, they're asking all the questions to make sure that their fleets are safe. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they're secure as well. Because these attacks, by the way, part of them are really monitoring, like we talked about ransomware attacks, but it's safety as well. So they need to be able to say that one of the requirements, they want to make sure that it has that security in it.
Thinking of an example here, you tell me if I'm going down the wrong path, but a lot of the brakes now on the trucks are not electronically controlled, but they're electronically monitored, and they can be applied through the electronics on board the truck. Is it possible that if somebody got hold of the right code, they could start applying brakes on individual trucks or a fleet-wide of
yes,
trucks?
Yes, they can. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
It's not a truck, but an agriculture. So agriculture, they all have that kill switch. Mm-hmm. So most recently, between Russia and Ukrainian war, John Deere was able to take over their vehicles and remotely use the kill switch. So same thing could happen with an attack that just presses that kill switch.
Can you give us some examples of some of the hacks that have occurred and demonstrate?
Yes, yes, yes. So let's talk about several attacks. So first of all, we talk about how the attacks implicate more than a single vehicle. So let's start with the attack that we saw at early on in the beginning of the year of 2022, where David Colombo was able to access 25 Teslas all over the world. And that's 25 cars in 25 different countries. He was able to get a hold of the car through, by the way he did that is through an application that it's not provided by Tesla, but Tesla endorsed that application. And through that app, it was able to get hold of the car, was able to blow the horn.
A third-party vendor.
Third-party vendor, able to blow the horn, on and off the roll down up and down the windows. So you can say, well, that's fun.
Kind of amusing.
It's amusing, right?
Ha ha ha.
But think about a truck driver driving now 70 miles per hour on I-95, and all of a sudden his window starts to open and close, or the horn is blowing. That could really be dangerous. It was interesting because David visited our office, so he told us this story, how he got hold of one of the Teslas he got hold of was in the US. And through that app, he was able to get not only hold of the vehicle, also get all the details of the driver, and was able to call him actually. And he called him
telephone.
He was driving.
Okay.
And he asked him, he goes, you're next to Walmart now. He says, yes, how do you know? And he explained who he is and said, are you willing to play along? And he let him blow the horn, roll down the windows. So now we see, so there was a famous case in 2015 of taking over a Jeep Cherokee. Mm-hmm. That was in 2015. That was one single vehicle.
Yep.
And
yep.
Now we moved away from that one single vehicle to all of a sudden the entire fleet of Tesla. So that was early 2022. Then comes a little bit later, in 2022, we've got Sam Curry. Sam Curry, in September, he knows nothing about cars, but he decided he wanted to hack a car. By November, he figured out how to do that. And how did he do it? Through the vulnerability and the telematics system by SiriusXM. Turns out that all he needed to know was the VIN number. And as you know, the VIN number.
VIN number, that's easy to get hold of.
Easy to get hold of. You can just see it, right, on the window. You can find, you can go to the web and get a whole range of VINs. So he found this vulnerability that through the VIN, again, using APIs that were not authenticating as it should, he was able to get into vehicles. So now we see, and he got into vehicles from 12 different OEMs. So now we go from one single vehicle to an entire fleet to multiple fleets. So from one car to millions of cars to 10 millions of cars. And not only that, since he got through the telematics, it's a deeper attack as well.
So this wasn't an attack at the OE level? It was a third party, again, another vendor of some part of the truck?
In this case, it's SiriusXM. It's the
SiriusXM?
Yep, the infotainment system.
Oh, boy.
And then what we've seen, we talk about also geopolitical. So again, last year, a group called Anonymous attacked Yandex. Yandex is similar to Uber in Moscow. What they did is they were able, through API, to get into the back office systems of Yandex, which is a taxi service. And they were able at the same minute send every single vehicle to one single spot in Moscow, creating a total gridlock. Now, the interesting thing is that no cars were harmed, right? They didn't touch cars. All they did is they got hold of a system, API system, that controls a car and basically weaponizing the cars and created the gridlock. And this is a direct impact on the safety of people now, right?
So what sort of vectors are these bad guys using to access that level of control in the vehicle itself?
So it starts from vectors of attack into attacking the vehicle directly. So things like the remote start or the TCU, ECU, or the telematics, which all of these require a lot of knowledge about vehicle. But now you have all these new vectors. So one new vector that we've seen that counts for about 20% of the attacks is really through APIs and mobile applications. It's about 20%, which is a rise from about 2% the year before. That's one. But another vector that we've seen now this year is 4% of the incident came from EV attacks, which sounds like you're going to tell me, okay, 4%, that's not a big number. But if you think where the growth of EV is and all the money that is spent for EV, you know how to multiply it. The second thing, when you look at EV, one side of EV is really, again, back to APIs, because all the communication for charging, start and stop charging, it's all done through API. Mm-hmm. But now you're talking about new vectors as well. You're talking about attacks that can come into the charging station, into the vehicle. So somebody can get hold of an entire charging network and now sending commands to overcharge cars and basically disabling all these cars. That's another area of attack, which is from the charging station into the vehicle. But then you also have the V2G, because now you can attack from the vehicle, you can attack the grid.
Through that chain.
And you know, that, I don't know how many drivers are aware of the fact that when they're plugging in their car into that charging station, it's not only electronics that is flowing through that pipe. It's using a protocol called OCPP, which the good news, it's a very well-defined protocol. The bad news, it's a very well-defined protocol, so it's easier to attack it. Okay. So they don't realize that now there's two things that can happen. On one hand, they can attack the car and disable the car. Again, let's think about a fleet, right? Think about a fleet depot that somebody can attack it overnight and through the charging station disable the entire fleet, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, how many drivers think about the fact that once this is flowing, all their PII data is there. Their billing data, their credit card data, all of this could be taken from the vehicle as well. So that's another vector that we've seen now that is being added.
So again, this is another example of where, from a truck fleet's perspective, whether or not your vendors and your suppliers are taking your security seriously is not something you'd really know unless you ask, right?
You have to ask. You would not know that. It's almost like back to the days where it was Intel inside. You want to know that there's a cybersecurity protective inside. So an upstream, for example, or whoever is, you want to know. Now, regulation is playing a major, major part. So regulation is now defining that this has to be taken. It's more advanced in Europe. Regulation go WP29, R155 that require you to have the cars monitored. That regulation is still not in the US, but several things we see. First of all, we do see OEMs that understand the liability and they do it regardless of the regulation, but the regulation is coming. We see that NHTSA is promoting and encouraging OEMs to be part of Auto ISAC. Auto ISAC is this body that shares information between automotive manufacturers and tier ones and tier two to discuss internally cybersecurity. Okay. So NHTSA is encouraging everybody to join Auto ISAC because it's supporting each other. We're strong fans of Auto ISAC. We're partner with Auto ISAC. Also, if you read some of NHTSA's recommendations, they're very similar to what's in the regulation. So I would expect very soon, some of it is coming already to the US, 2025, 2026, there's regulation to come to the US. So regulation is going to drive that as well.
Well, tell us a little bit about where you come in then, upstream. How do you help keep the bad guys at bay?
So maybe a little bit about upstream. So we've been around for about 6 years ago. We are, what we do is we provide a very unique solution to protect vehicles. And the way we do that, first thing we do is we put nothing in the vehicle. So there's no agent, there's nothing physical that needs to be installed in the vehicle. So we're doing all of it by having a data platform that sits in the cloud. Okay. What we do is we ingest data that is coming from the vehicle and from the ecosystem of the vehicle. We're taking that data. We're running it through a data factory. We normalize the data. So different OEMs have different types of data. One calls it velocity, one calls it speed. So we normalize it. Then we cleanse the data. We enrich the data where needed. We're putting it all in a digital twin. The digital twin is a digital representation of every single thing in the vehicle, every single unit and the status of every single unit. And we're looking at the current state and the previous state. And what we're doing is we're looking for threats and anomalies. Now, by being not in the vehicle, there's three big advantages. One, since we don't have to put anything in the vehicle, we're automatically protecting the entire fleet. Don't have to install anything. The second thing is because we're not only looking at vehicle data, we can look at the data from the entire ecosystem. So that would include external applications, which we gave several examples, charging station information as well. The third thing is we're looking at a vehicle not only as an individual, but also as a fleet. So one thing that may not be an anomaly for a single vehicle could be an anomaly when it's fleet-wise. I'll give you an example. Let's say we're sitting here now in Santa Clara, and we see that there is a command to blow the horn of a car that is coming from London. Now, is that anomaly or not, Jim? We don't know. Okay. I may be visiting now my buddy in London, and I'm gonna say, hey, let me show you a cool trick. I'm sitting here in London, and I'm pressing a button, and it blows my horn, or it rolls down the window. So it could not be an anomaly. But if we see there's 100 commands going from London to Santa Clara, oh, okay, we see here an anomaly. So we're doing that today for over 25 million vehicles that we're protecting. Many of the large OEMs are our customers.
So as a fleet owner, then I wouldn't be going to upstream saying, what can you do to protect my internal ecosystem? That's you're at the OE level.
No, because we have fleet solutions as well. So okay. Yes, we can protect the fleet. We can protect OEM. We can protect tier ones. Basically, anybody in the smart mobility ecosystem we can protect.
Okay, anything else you'd like to get across before we stop the interview?
No, I think just to summarize what we see as trends. So we see several things as trends. We see that there are many new attack vectors. It's the smart mobility, the APIs. We see that the magnitude of the account of the attacks is now all of a sudden larger. It's a fleet-wide attack. And we see all the new players that are now being part of this threat vectors or the threat players that are coming in. There's one more that I didn't touch as well, which is interesting. It's really the people that they are now attacking their own vehicle. So if you think about what OEMs are today looking for is increasing their revenue by selling all the premium services, correct?
Or they sell them and license them.
If you look at the subscription fee or something.
Exactly.
If you look at the projection, it's trillions of dollars by 2030 that's going to come from these services.
Yes.
Very famous case was recently when a known OEM said they're going to charge, I think it was 12 euros a month or 18 euros a month for heated seats. This was not very popular by the customers. So they think, I'm going to hack it. I'm going to jailbreak my vehicle. So we see several things. So we see new attack vectors. We see wider attacks. And we see new threat players or actors.
So in a sense, then, even the vendors need to be thinking about hardening their software ecosystem to prevent their customers from hacking right back in and trying to get some free service out of them.
Yes, absolutely. Because this whole SDV world, the software-defined vehicles, I mean, the way to look at a software-defined vehicle is if in yesterday's world, when you drove a car off the lot, when you bought it, that's going to be the best your car is ever going to be. In tomorrow's world, you drive your car off the lot, it's just the beginning. It's just going to get better and better and better. Now, that world is phenomenal, but it brings new risks. Because how is it done? It's done by sending you new software. Sending you new software, it's another vector. You can send now malicious software through that process as well. So that's the cyber side of it. From the vendor perspective, it's exactly what you mentioned. It's these new services that they want to upsell to you. Then all of a sudden, the driver, it's all in the vehicle. It's locked by software, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So now they can jailbreak the car. So they want to protect it as well.
We've been speaking with Chaim Kanter. He's the North American Vice President for Upstream Security. Chaim, thank you. That was a really eye-opening discussion.
Thank you, Jim. Pleasure meeting you. And I think it's the key thing. It's the awareness. To have the awareness of, one hand, the risks, but on the other hand, that there's a mitigation of that risk.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're on the job. Thanks.
I've been speaking with Chaim Kanter, the President of North American Operations at Upstream Security. If you liked that interview, please hit the subscribe button and give us a like. That'll help other people to find us as well. You can check out our other social media channels. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And don't forget to check out the digital version of HDT. You'll find tons of great trucking industry content at truckinginfo.com. I'm Jim Park. Thanks for watching.